Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And happy stinking New Year, you bunch of lunatics and crazy peoples.
We don't know that. We know that.
They're in the haunt industry. We kind of do.
All right, fine.
We kind of do.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, all of our brethren in the haunted attraction industry. Happy 2017. And remember, it's only 303 days until Halloween.
Yay!
Get to work. And yes, we are recording this. We have been in the midst of nothing but storms this year.
Yeah.
2017 for us has been literally nothing but heavy rains, high winds, and terrible fireworks displays because of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
We went literally to two New Year's parties and none of them could shoot fireworks.
Yeah.
It's kind of comical, actually.
And they were supposed to both be outside, mm-hmm. and they had to be inside.
Oh, yeah, and both of them singing songs about fire pits, and we're going to play games and shoot fireworks and ring in 2017, and yeah, it didn't happen.
No.
Best we did in both situations was drink quietly, play card games, and sit underneath a covered porch.
Which is perfectly fine.
Totally fine with it myself. But yes, this is our first podcast of 2017. We have a lot to go through. We're talking about international haunting.
Yeah. So if you're looking for some place cool to go this summer for your summer vacation or whatever.
We might have a few suggestions and ideas. Yeah. And I gotta be honest, this is one of those topics that when we put it in our show notes list, I'm like, we're never gonna be able to get an hour out of this. We've only been to a couple ourselves. We don't really have a lot to speak about from personal experience here. But then it's one of the things you start like researching it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, okay, what do we do to make this just an hour?
Right.
It's one of those types of podcasts. But anyways, first things first, as is usual, we have conference reminders.
Yeah.
So, do I kick off or you kick off this week? We always have to debate that.
I don't remember.
You know what I'll do? I'll start this week.
That's fine.
What the hell?
You can start off 2017.
First, yes, I will. I will start off 2017 by talking about Halloween and Party Expo, January 14th through 17th, right here in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the Muriel Convention Center, the Ernest Memorial Convention Center. Ernest Memorial Convention Center. I'll get it right eventually, I promise
you. It's the big one on the river.
Yeah, the big one on... Well, it's on Convention Center Boulevard.
Yes.
Literally. There are over 350 vendors going through. It does require business verification. If you have a tax ID, you are A-OK. You can learn about filling out that simple little form and the other details at HalloweenPartyExpo.com. And if you're going to be in town, let us know. We are Haunt Weekly at Twitter, Haunt Weekly at Facebook. We would love to hear from you and maybe meet up if the opportunity arises.
Correct. And then on the 17th, after that one's over, you can fly over to Hawaii.
Wow, that is a hell of a jump.
Because January 17th through 20th is the Corn Party. Multiple locations in Hawaii, as I mentioned. It's for operators of corn mazes, and you can find more information about that at themaze, MAIZE.com.
That maze. I just got that one. No, I didn't.
No. No. We've been hearing you make that joke. Please let this one be over so we can stop hearing that joke.
January 26th through 30th. Non-party poopers can go to HauntCon. It's in Nashville, Tennessee, the Sheraton Nashville Airport. It includes tours of Haunted Hell, Nashville, Nashville Nightmare, and Slaughterhouse. Learn more at HauntCon.com. That's HauntCon.com.
Then, February 18th through 19th, Windy City Haunters in Oaklawn, Illinois, Midnight Terror Haunted House. Tickets are just $20. It includes free classes, a mixer, and an after party. If we were in the area, I would so go to this.
Yes, this is a conference that's on my budget.
Exactly. And you can find out more about them at WindyCityHaunters.com.
So honestly,
and
you'll
check
probably,
their Facebook.
Yeah, honestly, you'll want to check their Facebook. Like, most of the information's on their Facebook.
Yeah.
After that, March 23rd through 26th, it is Transworld Halloween and Attraction Show, St. Louis, Missouri, at the America Center. early bird discounts between now and pretty much opening day, $50 off. New this year is Escape Room City, an entire quarter of the already very large trade show floor of this will be dedicated to Escape Room stuff, which sounds awesome. So check that out and much more at HaShow.com, HaShow.com.
Okay, moving into May, May 1st through the 5th, we have Room Escape Conference and Tour. It's in Niagara Falls, New York, at the Niagara Falls Conference and Event Center. Tours of Five Wits, Escape Games Canada, and Locked Up Escape Games. Now, if you heard that keyword, Canada, you know to bring some kind of way to get across borders.
You can do it with just a passport card.
Yes.
And actually, I learned this because we were looking at renewing our passports, one of the reasons why the international stuff came up.
Right.
If you get on it right now, you can get your passport card in time.
Yeah.
So, do it!
Yeah. And the conference for that is the 1st through the 3rd, and the tours are the 4th and the 5th, and more information at roomescapeshow.com.
Indeed. Then, on the West Coast, it is the West Coast Haunters Convention. I know, so predictable, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's May 12th through the 14th in Portland, Oregon, the Doubletree Hotel. Tour of Hour to Midnight Room Escape, Labyrinth Room Escape, and Escapism Room Escape. From the redundancy department, see redundancy.
Yeah.
You can learn more at hauntersconvention.com. Sounds real exciting.
Mm-hmm. And then, June 8th through the 11th, we have Midwest Haunters Convention in Columbus, Ohio. They will be touring the Scaratorium and others. You can find out more about them at midwesthauntersconvention.com.
Indeed. And then it's Midsummer Scream, July 29th through 30th in Long Beach, California, the Long Beach Convention Center. It's by the people behind Creepy LA and Theme Park Adventure. There's not much in the way of details right now, still a little far off from this one, but you can get tickets and other information at midsummerscream.org. That's one S there, Midsummer, well, okay, it's two S's, but only one S between Summer and Scream. Midwest Summer Singular Scream.org. There we go.
Except there wasn't a West in there. It's just Midsummer Scream.
Oh, shut up. Midsummer Scream.
All right.
It's been a long New Year's, okay?
August 4th through the 5th, we have Haunt Fair in Rankin Coma, New York, at the Clarion Hotel. They will be doing a haunted bus tour on Friday.
Yes.
Which is a bus that goes around haunted places.
Yes, indeed.
And you can find out more about them at haunt-fair, FAIRE.com.
And then in August, August 5th through the 6th, to be specific, it is Scare LA. It's in Los Angeles, as the name might indicate. They have not picked the exact location yet, but mark it on your calendar and go to scarela.com to stay up to date on what is going on with that one.
Yeah, and then finally, for right now, August 25th through 27th, Halloween and Haunt Fest show will be in Dallas-Fort Worth. There aren't any updates right now on that, but you can find out more and look for them on HalloweenandHaunt.com.
Yes. They do have, as we've talked about previously, a lot of the old information up.
Right.
So you can check out and see what they did in 2016 and get a feel if it's something you want to do in 2017.
Exactly.
They seem to do a lot of neat stuff.
Yeah.
So I'd be really stoked about this one, and it's one that's close enough, it might be in our sphere.
Yeah.
So, anyways, international.
Yep.
There's this weird thing in the haunted attraction industry here to sort of think of this as like a bizarre U.S. phenomenon.
Right.
And I hear this all the time because it's like I've been haunting for years.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to me when we went to England those first times.
Right.
To actually see if they had haunted attractions.
No.
It didn't occur to me. And I don't know why, but we do tend to think that this is a U.S. industry when in many ways we're actually kind of behind
yeah.
in certain key areas, as we're going to get into in a little bit here. But yeah, it's bizarre. And one of the things we talked about previously, and this goes all the way back to episode 40 for us.
Right.
It was a news episode, divisible by four. That's how you know. but we discussed Hysteria Haunted Attraction opening in Dubai.
Yes.
Which that just sounded absolutely insane when we talked about it then.
It did.
Dubai's, in fact, I believe it is the first in the Middle East.
Right.
Dubai's first haunted attraction. Yeah. Came in at 3,500 square feet. It is inside the Dubai Mall. And the reason it came up in that episode for U.S. Haunters was because It was designed by the Pittsburgh team Extreme Fear Design and Production, the people that do 100 Acres Manor, who we just mentioned previously.
Right.
So, yeah. And that really got me thinking when I'd heard about that,
mm-hmm.
because we've had experiences in haunted attractions in other countries, and we're going to talk about them as we go through this. But it got me really thinking about, is this something that's more common than we realize?
Right.
How big is this industry elsewhere? Because if there's one in Dubai, it stands to reason there are others in other parts of the world that are similar.
Yeah, and we heard about ones, you know, that were seasonal in, like, Canada.
Uh-huh.
I think there's the ship that's up there, Mary's ship.
Yeah.
I can't remember the full name. I'm sorry, I should have done more research. But, yeah, but no. So we've heard of ones that were seasonal, but these new ones that are coming up seem to be more year-round affairs.
Yes. And, like, the article I found that was very interesting here talked about something called ghost houses.
Right.
What they're called in India.
Yeah.
And this was really, really interesting to me because India, while definitely a modern country,
mm-hmm.
is not one... We tend to think of haunted attractions in the U.S. as being a luxury item.
Right.
Primarily because they're so damned expensive to go to.
They are.
I mean, look at our annual haunted attendance budget. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we budget out about $1,000 a year just to go to haunted houses.
Yeah, for 2.5 people. We have a third person who comes to some and doesn't come to others.
Right.
So for 2.5 people, about $1,000 and about a dozen haunts.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's expensive. That's not something everybody can afford to do globally, especially when you go to countries like India, where the average salary, the average monthly income is much lower than in the United States.
Right.
But yet, haunted attractions are a booming business there.
Right.
And it's focusing on, like I was saying, these ghost houses, which they're opening up in malls.
Yeah.
They're opening up in retail space in malls, and they started in big cities, like, you know, and they started in the big cities within the country, and now they're actually popping up in smaller and smaller towns. And what the article here is about it opening up in, like, mid-sized town malls now.
Right. Because it's really taken off and become popular.
And they usually have what we would consider to be a very small space.
Right.
1,500 square feet or so.
Yeah.
It's large for, like, a retail space in a mall.
Yeah.
But it's still small for a haunted attraction because... like our garage haunt is 625 square feet.
Yeah.
And it's minuscule, I admit. But so it's only three times the size of what we do as home haunters.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it is a small attraction. It's not, you know, the tens of thousands of square feet that we see at the big U.S. places.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, they've got a lower startup cost.
Yeah, lower startup cost and lower... recurring costs. Their rent is lower because of that, even though they're in a very, very high demand area.
Right. But they sign year-long
leases. And
so they get deals on the space.
And they also get deals because they are an attraction to bring people into the mall.
Right.
Malls are actually in India seeking out these types of attractions to bring them in.
Right.
Because this is a way to increase foot traffic, a way to make people... It's a self-feeding cycle where more people come to the mall and shop elsewhere. It's more people shop elsewhere, they go to the haunted attraction or the ghost house.
Or they drop their kids off there. And
exactly.
Yeah. Because I think that it said that kids above 7
can go.
Were allowed to go in.
Which is interesting. But yeah, it was a very, very fascinating article. And the look at the way... haunting in India works. It's very different from what we're used to in the United States.
Right.
Like I said, it's smaller. And that's one thing I found fascinating. They actually talked about the ticket price. The ticket price is the equivalent of $1 US.
Yeah, which is really low. That's a low entry price.
Yeah, it's very, very low. All right, sorry.
Yeah,
some
minor technical issues. Like, a lot of people could be able to go to it with that that price. And I wonder how fast that price is going to shoot up once they continue to take off and grow and see what they're about. They also have a combination of live actors and animatronic type.
Yeah. They definitely have steered more away from the live actors as part of what they're getting. What part of how they're able to keep their costs down is they do steer away from live actors.
Yeah, I think the article said that they typically have one actor.
Yeah,
which is probably the person running it.
Yeah, and remember Leonard Pickle talking about how that's how he ran his first haunt.
Right.
Basically, he went around. Sold the ticket at the booth.
Right.
And then went into the back and did all the scares in the middle as they went in like a big horseshoe through the entire retail space, because it was a retail space haunt too.
Right. So it's not a bad way to get started.
No, it's not a bad way to get started at all.
The question is, will it stay in this
situation? I don't know.
Or will it go on?
It's very, very fascinating way they've begun this in India. And like I said, it's spread to a wide variety of places, getting smaller and smaller towns, because it's sustainable even in a place where incomes are lower and now there are fewer people.
And even with the lower ticket price.
Yeah, exactly. So if it's sustainable, Godspeed, man. I'm very impressed by that. Now, the next country I wanted to take a special look at was Japan.
Yeah.
Now, Japan is really interesting to me from a haunted attraction perspective, and I totally want to do what our friend Kyle did.
Yeah.
And go take a tour of Japan. And I would seriously go to Japan just to go to haunted attractions.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. Totally down for this.
Yes.
And we would have an easier time with it since we're a couple.
Yeah. Yeah, because he wasn't allowed into one by himself, because he was
by himself.
Just by himself.
And he couldn't rope another group to, like, take him. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, it's bizarre, but... And such is life sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we want to bring Kyle in to actually discuss his experiences in a later episode. So there's going to be probably a whole episode just about Japan.
Yeah.
That's definitely coming down the road. But in the meantime, just a few things that I know from my research and from talking with him. First, they do have a lot of haunted attractions. I mean, a lot.
Yeah, he was able to find them, no problems.
And this is a guy that speaks about as much Japanese as he does Martian.
Yeah, as anybody does Martian. Mm-hmm.
Hey, how do you know how much Martian I speak? I don't recall telling you if I spoke Martian or not. I don't speak Martian.
I don't think anyone speaks Martian.
Anyways, but yes, he was able to find these trivially... And actually had to cut several out of it. He went there for a long period of time.
Yeah, he was gone for like a month.
Yeah, and he had to cut some out. So there's a lot over there.
Right.
The attractions are very, very different in terms of like how they operate than the U.S. ones.
Right.
U.S. ones, we typically, and this is like something that's unfortunate that we do, we tend to make our backstory and our exposition something of a secondary thought.
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah.
And this is something we've talked about. We did a Baby Got Backstory episode a while back. This is something we...
And in fact, if you're getting ready... If you are a teardown haunt and you're getting ready to rebuild, be sure to build in that backstory some.
Yeah.
So...
Definitely something to think about here. But yeah, they put a heavy, heavy focus on backstory. Many haunts in Japan will not let you go into the haunt...
Right.
...until you have received the exposition.
Right.
And it is detailed. It is thorough. They tell urban legends and stories about horrible things. You know,
yeah. Well, it's not only that, but they, if you know anything about Japanese culture, they have a rich ghost history. Mm-hmm. And, well, I don't know if they're ghosts or spirits or, you know, but basically there's all of these legends that exist within their culture.
Yes.
And they utilize some of those at least in these haunted houses.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got that built in.
Yes. And then they use that back... But this is one part I find really, really cool, is they take that backstory. You need to know it, because when you get into the haunt, you're now a character in that story.
Right.
You're not just some Joe Schmo happened to going through a haunted place.
Yeah.
You didn't like roll up like Scooby-Doo and start going through a haunted house.
Right.
You're now a character in the story. You have a job in that haunt. Whether it's to... find the little girl who went missing, or to save, you know, to save this person, or to whatever.
Right.
You actually have a mission. It's like an escape room type thing. You have a job to do while you're there. And you actually have to interact and participate in the haunt and to do it.
Right.
And like, this isn't necessarily all haunted attractions. By the way, we're speaking in broad strokes about all these, obviously.
Yes.
Out of sheer need and time, and like the fact we only have about 30 minutes left in the podcast. But the point of the matter is, I find that idea so fascinating, and I really want to experiment with it, that I would actually be willing to A, learn at least a modicum of Japanese to make it happen.
Okay.
But also, it's just, it's such a cool way to do it, I think. It sounds a lot more fun. And they definitely, in Japan, in the U.S., we have, what's the number one rule for actors when scaring? Scare forward.
Yeah.
We always believe in scaring forward, pushing people along. In Japan, it's all about whatever gets the best reaction.
Yeah.
They believe in allowing, and in fact, I think Kyle used the word playthrough.
Yeah.
If you come up to a group that's going slower, they're kind of like, it's golf course rules.
Right.
They let you have to let you play forward.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of Japanese haunts, they will not give a rat's ass about scaring forward. They will scare at you. They will scare you back.
Right.
They will definitely do those things. And it is very, very different in terms of feel. And everyone I know that has been to Japanese haunts have said that they are really, really intense.
Intense and interesting.
Yes.
And not like U.S. haunts at all.
Uh-huh. A completely different experience, which I think is very interesting. I think there's a lot we can glean from that.
Yeah.
Now, the U.K., this is the one I found really fascinating for me. I had no bloody clue how big the U.K. haunt scene was until I started looking into it.
Yeah.
This was crazy. I knew they had one, because mm-hmm. we've been there. This is the one we've got personal experience with.
Right.
But wow, is it bazangas. It's dozens and dozens of attractions, large ones all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I found interesting is I remember when you and I were in Edinburgh,
mm-hmm.
we saw ads for the Edinburgh Dungeon.
Right.
And we couldn't do it.
Right.
Basically, where we like landed in the city, the train station, and the things we wanted to do, there just wasn't time. It was never going to happen.
We had like half a day.
Yeah, we had like half a day. We had not enough time. Which realistically, we did not set aside enough time to do Edinburgh. That was totally our error.
Yeah. I'm sure if we go back, or when we go back, I'm sure we will be back over that way.
Yeah, we will set aside more time for Edinburgh, because it is a wonderful town.
Yeah.
I feel hopeless. That's like my biggest regret about that trip, was that we didn't spend more time there.
Oh. Okay.
That's my only real regret.
Yeah.
We had so many other awesome experiences, though. But anyways, the Edinburgh Dungeon is actually part of a chain of dungeon attractions. There's the London Dungeon, the York Dungeon, and a couple of others.
Yeah, I remember looking up the London one to see if we could get there when we were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are actually a chain of attractions in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, it's a very, very, very pronounced culture there, and it's easy to see why. In the UK especially, they have all these castles and actual, you know, dungeons.
Right. Exactly.
That they can open these haunts in, and that's
atmosphere done.
Atmosphere done. And boom, I would kill to have like just that starting point for atmosphere.
Yeah, no kidding.
You walk in, oh well, we don't have to do any foam on these walls. Screw that.
Nope.
No texturing needed here.
Nope.
Boom. Moving on. Yeah, that would be awesome. And we had sort of a surprise haunted attraction experience in the UK. I really liked, we went to Audit Castle,
mm-hmm.
Which is for, it, you would most likely know it as the place that did the outdoor shots of Hogwarts.
Yeah.
In the first two Harry Potter movies.
Correct.
Before they went to all CG on them.
Right.
Basically, it's Hogwarts.
Yeah. Yes, there is a picture of Jonathan being
strangled by Snape, by not Snape, Hagrid.
Hagrid.
Yeah, and let me tell you, man, because I was just goofing off. I'm not a huge Harry Potter buff. I like it, but I'm not like a huge...
Your mom is a huge Harry Potter buff.
Yeah, realistically, the reason we were there was to drive all of our Harry Potter friends crazy.
Yeah.
If we're going to be completely honest, that was like 90% of the goal.
Right.
Then
mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. In spades. But we got there, and they were actually had some of the Harry Potter characters there. They had, it was Hagrid and Harry there. And you could do photo ops with them. And I'm not going to take time from a kid who wants to do a photo op with them.
Right.
So I waited until everyone cleared out.
Yep.
I literally put myself last in line for this photo op.
Yep.
And then they were still there, and they said, okay, yeah. I said, well, okay, well, treat me like I'm Slytherin. Harry took his cane, hooked it around my neck, actually choked me, and Harry's got his wand right in my nose.
Yeah.
It's a great photo. I'll have to see if I can find it. I know we have it.
Yeah.
And put it into the show notes. But, yeah. But anyways, while we were there, someone came up to us, almost like a drug pusher.
Yeah.
Hey, you want tickets to the haunted house?
Yeah.
That's almost exactly how it happened.
Right.
Except it was actually not like a gravelly voice. It was a sweet woman.
Yes. Well, there is that.
Well, there's
but that doesn't make as good of a story.
No, it doesn't. But still, the actual, hey, you want tickets to the haunted house?
Yeah.
That actually did happen.
Yes.
And we're like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
We're like, there's a haunted house. What the? We weren't notified.
We were here for the poison gardens and to make our friends jealous, but.
No, okay. Well, no, what an opportunity. And it was actually in one of, I don't know if it's an actual dungeon or not, but it felt dungeon-esque.
Well, everything underneath a castle kind of does.
Yeah, true enough.
So.
But it was very interesting because this was a haunt that was much more like the JC style haunts of old, where they would lead you from room to room and have scenes play out.
Right. And it was more historical.
Yeah.
It had a lot of historical information about the castle and about the people who lived there. And not a lot of scares.
No. There were some, I mean, to be clear, but it was mostly focusing on, like, theatrical acting and...
Right. Delivering the story.
And they did an amazing job, for the record.
Yeah.
Some damn talented actors working in there.
Right.
Loved every second of it. And they did have scares, especially, in fact, it was kind of weird. They would do little scares as you walk from scene to scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because the layout of it was so that... because it's an old castle and it's not built with any kind of, like, logic or
right.
reason. You do a lot of backtracking and snaking around things to get right. from room to room. And so as you were doing that, the actors would occasionally pop in and say hi.
Yeah.
So to speak. So, but still, that seems to be a big, big thing in the UK is, of course, tethering their haunted attraction experience to their history.
Yeah.
Which that just makes way too much sense to not do it because... The UK's got all the history in the world on that.
Right, exactly. In fact, we were talking to a couple on the way out, and they're like, we were telling them that we had a haunted house in our garage.
Yeah.
And they're like, you have ghosts in your garage?
No. Calm down. Oh, yeah.
So it's so tied to history that sometimes it can get confusing when
yeah.
talking to the locals.
And what it reminds me of, now that I think about it, is... Even though they're actual haunted attractions,
right?
It reminds me of kind of how we tether our quote-unquote haunted attractions to our history here in the French Quarter in New Orleans.
And the ghost tours and
yeah,
so
exactly.
forth. Yeah.
Except here it's more about, like I said, ghost tours and spooky museums and things
right.
like that. Rather than it is... So that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on, and I basically, as I started going through this, every major European nation has at least some haunted attraction. Something going on. And it was interesting, because like, one of the first ones I ran across was Amsterdam in the Netherlands has a seasonal one, which is unusual enough itself.
Right.
But it's a seasonal one that also is a bar.
That sounds awesome.
Your ticket includes a free shot of Jägermeister. I came in them all.
Yeah.
Paris has several attractions that I found interesting.
Right.
One that doubles as a museum.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this, though. Paris and the French Quarter seem to have a lot in common here, and that most of their haunted attractions, well, obviously, but in this area...
Sorry.
Don't give me that look. but in that, their haunted attractions are more ghost tours and ghost walks and things like that.
Right. And that makes sense.
Yes. Spain, this one I found really, really interesting. Spain is actually home to Terror on Church Street, which that's the English translation of it. And that's fascinating because it's actually a franchised out operation that was briefly open in Orlando.
Hmm.
So it's one of the few times I can think of where a outside the U.S. company opened a U.S. haunted attraction.
Right.
In fact, I don't know if I have heard of any other.
No. If you guys know of one...
Yeah, let me know on that one.
Let us
curious.
Know. Yeah.
I am not familiar with one. That doesn't mean it hasn't happened, though.
Exactly.
But yeah, they still operate in Spain. They still operate actually in other countries, including England.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely worth checking out there. And then we had our experience in Hungary that was...
Right.
...really interesting.
Yeah.
Because, okay, the topography of Hungary, especially on the Buddha side of the river.
Right.
Is basically, it's fairly flat for most of it, except for Buddha Hill.
Yeah, Buddha Castle, which is where we were.
Which is where we were. There is a big, freaking, almost mountainous-like hill in the middle of it all.
Right.
And everything around it is relatively flat and evenly sloped.
Yeah.
I mean, it slopes toward the river, as it is wont to do, but it's not, like, crazy hilly or anything.
Right.
Well, underneath Buddha Mountain, or Buddha Hill, is
what they close call it. Yeah, close to... It's close to Fisherman's Wharf.
Yeah.
And Buddha.
Yeah. Basically, underneath there, though, is a whole bunch of tunnels.
Yeah.
Now, some of them tunnels, and these are natural existing caves.
Right.
About half of them or so.
Right.
Are sort of finished. Yeah. And they were turned into a hospital that was used heavily during World War II.
Yes.
And it's actually got a really, really interesting history. If you're in Budapest, do check out that hospital. It is amazingly fascinating.
Yes, but don't buy the gas mask because they won't let you take it on the plane.
Yeah, we'd like that. We're like, these gas masks are so awesome. We have to...
They're authentic and they're $4.
They're authentic World War II gas masks, man.
Yeah.
How the hell could I pass that up?
Right.
And then couldn't get them. Oh.
Yeah, I know.
Damn it.
Yeah. But anyways. That hospital was actually pretty darn freaky.
Yeah, that was creepy on its own. And it was partly because, and even this is a historical attraction, not a haunted one, but it ended up being kind of scary because they used mannequins.
Yes. They're not very well-made mannequins.
It's Uncanny Valley.
It's very Uncanny Valley. And, yeah, it's just an odd experience.
I totally want a job working there where I just hang out and pose with the mannequins and then move and scare people.
Yeah.
It would be
of course you do.
Of course I do, right?
Yeah. But no, they've got a long history there, and you get to, do the siren at the end.
Yeah, the air raid siren. You get to turn an air raid siren. It's loud.
Yes,
it's very
it is.
Loud.
It is very loud.
But the other side of those tunnels are not finished.
Right.
And they are still very much bare.
Yes.
And they are operated as a haunted attraction.
Yes. They are Vlad's cave.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I couldn't remember the name of it. I couldn't find it on a Google search.
Or maybe Dracula's cave. Maybe they went with the U.S. name, the Dracula's cave.
They went with the U.S. name. But,
yeah.
And it's fascinating because apparently it was originally an unauthorized haunted attraction.
Right. And we thought it had closed down.
Yeah.
And we found out the night before. We were supposed to leave an hour before they closed that they were open.
Yeah, basically we were... we like to spend our last days when we travel, our last evening, just kind of milling about and taking in some of the scenery and...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Just kind of winding down.
Winding down, exactly. It's we're out and about, we're just going to roam, maybe grab a drink and make dinner somewhere.
Yeah.
And just, not do anything specific.
Right.
We're just going to mill about the local area.
Yeah.
And it was, when we're roaming around and then we see the sign for it.
Right.
Because we had heard about it previously.
Yeah.
And we had heard it was closed by police raid.
Right.
I'm not making any of this up. And we're like, don't bother going to that. But apparently they'd gotten their permits and it reopened.
Right.
And it's fascinating as a haunted attraction because there really aren't any scares, per se.
No.
Other than the deepest, darkest darkness I think I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah, so what you do is you go through a little gate and down these stairs, and there's nobody there.
Yeah, nobody.
You think you're lost already.
Yeah.
But it's well lit, and you go up to a counter and you buy a ticket.
Yeah.
And, I had my camera with me, as I do when I travel, and I was like, can I take photos in there? And they're like, sure.
You can try.
Yeah.
Gave us a look like we were idiots. And I'm like, we can take photos.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Yeah. I mean, this is a well-lit staging area.
Yeah, this is basically like any lobby in any museum you've ever been at this point.
So we turn around because the guy's pointing over to
where
to go. So we start walking over there and he goes, hey, wait.
And take this. And he hands me a gas lantern, an honest-to-God gas lantern.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh, this is cute. They're giving me a little prop to carry around. This is adorable. And here's the thing. I realized this in hindsight. We did not have our cell phones on us.
Right.
You know, and I'm realizing that was really stupid because cell phones have flashlights.
Yeah, but we didn't have any coverage over there, so there was no reason to take them everywhere.
No, we didn't. We minimized our usage of them.
Yeah.
And so we go around the corner, and it's like, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, because you go around a corner, another corner, and then another corner, and then you're in just stark darkness.
Yep.
You don't go through a door, you don't go through anything, just around a couple of bends, and you're in total black darkness.
Yeah.
The darkest, I mean, I was not exaggerating when I said this, the darkest darkness I've ever been in my life.
No.
This was mind-boggling to me. And all I've got is this gas lantern.
Yeah.
And I'm scared to death the damn thing's going to go out, because I know nothing about gas lanterns.
Right.
And I have no matches.
No. No.
I have no means of relighting it, even if I did know.
Right. And so we're going through, and they have
scenes and
a couple of scenes built out with mannequins and lighting, but mostly they have just the natural tunnel work.
Yeah.
And you're walking through, and you hear, if there's another group in there with you, which there wound up being one.
One.
Yes, there was one very scared group who we accidentally startled several times.
Yeah, this is how you realize you're a haunter.
Yeah.
Is when you're in this situation and you realize your instincts are to scare them.
Yeah.
But then you realize, no, I will get lost in here if I start playing that game.
Right. Yeah. Because you hear footsteps echoing everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were in there for a few minutes, the mist started coming in.
Yep.
The natural mist and fog, ground fog.
Yeah.
Because it was cold-ish, and it's a cave, and it's damp.
Well, they do warn you when you go into the hospital side of it that it will be like 10 degrees, 20 degrees cooler than the outside.
They actually offer you World War II coats to wear,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of cool. Did not take them up on that. Didn't need it.
Didn't really need it. It didn't feel that so.
Yeah.
But we were there in summer.
Like, yeah.
So it didn't. Yeah. I don't think that offer really applied to us.
Yeah. Well, some people took it and were happy they had it. But anyway.
Yeah, you know,
back to Dracula's cave.
Yeah.
So we're walking around and we see signs on the wall with arrows.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, oh, so we're supposed to go this way.
And bear in mind, like, this lantern puts a little light. We're basically having to shove the lantern against the signs.
Right.
In order to read them. These are not like reflective escape signs, exit signs or anything.
No.
These are like etched into the rock pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, these are very small signs. And so then we go the way the first one points. And we find an arrow pointing back the way we just came.
Yeah. And then we realize we don't read Hungarian.
Problem one. Yes, that was problem one. But the arrows point you to possible paths, not the actual path.
It's very based on exploration. It's very cool. The whole idea is that you're supposed to find your own way through this.
Right.
And your own way to the exit. And the exit itself has a little movie theater type thing.
Yeah.
That unfortunately we didn't get to see because we didn't find our way out until they were about to lock us in.
Yeah, they were locking up the main room. Yeah, we didn't even get to see the main room.
Yeah.
Probably because we passed that freaking fountain like four times.
Oh my god.
It was like a central room with tunnels going off everywhere. Yes. It's like, oh man.
How many times did we go to, is this the same fountain or is it a different fountain? I don't know.
I know.
We were so stonking lost.
Yeah.
It's really a very interesting.
Yeah, definitely leave more than 45 minutes to go through that.
If you do it, yeah, absolutely.
Especially on the night before.
Yeah. I want to do that again.
Yeah.
I want to go again. I want to give it another shot because I think we could do better. But
well, yeah, we wouldn't have to rush and we could actually read all the little plaques and stuff. Yeah. But
seriously, it was a very different experience. Yeah. And it was definitely haunted attraction, like I said, in my mind, because they did Dracula themed stuff.
Right.
And they were definitely out to scare you.
Yeah.
It just wasn't necessarily what we think of as the strike and startle type scary.
Right. It was just atmosphere. The atmosphere was completely.
It was to make you feel totally lost and helpless.
Yeah.
And boy, did it succeed at that.
Right. In fact, we had the discussion while we were in there. If they just put a couple of actors in there that did jump out, we would have lost it. We would have been gone.
Over.
Yeah.
It would have been over. But anyways, so in all of this, though, international attractions are definitely different than U.S. ones.
Yes.
And that one's a good example of, because I don't think you would see something so much like that in the USA, because I'm pretty sure all kinds of lawsuits about leaving people alone in caves. But there are some differences that seem to be pretty uniform in my research and also in our experiences. First, they're not seasonal.
Right.
Very, very few exceptions. They're just not seasonal attractions.
Yeah.
Part of that's because Halloween's just not as big of a deal in other places. And other times it's simply because, you know, they have the ability to sustain a year-round haunt, so why not do it? The interest is there.
Yeah, and a lot of the times their culture and ghost legends are year-round things.
Yes.
They're not just a Halloween-associated thing.
Yeah, and that's something that's kind of bizarre. It's like we have 2 months out of the year in the U.S. where it's okay to be macabre and thinking about those types of things.
Unless you're in a historical city and going on a ghost tour.
Yeah, exactly. There are exceptions to that.
Yeah.
But in general, there's like 2 months out of the year it's okay to be macabre.
Yep.
And other countries don't feel that way at all.
Nope.
They are smaller than U.S. ones. U.S. attractions, especially the really, really big ones we think about, tend to be, you know, 10,000 plus square feet.
Yeah.
Almost all international ones are under 5,000.
Yeah.
Almost all. And most of them, actually, based on the sample size I looked at, were under, I would say, 3,000 to 2,500 square feet.
Right.
They were under even half of that. These are very, very small. They use very few actors. And they try to play very conservatively with actors. And a lot of this, by the way, stems from them not being seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that these bigger haunts can sustain themselves when they have 10,000 square feet and hundreds of actors is because they're only paying for those actors, you know, 2 months out of the year.
Right.
They're not full-time, year-round employees, basically.
Yeah.
Whenever you go to, and they know they're going to run these mega lines the few weeks that they're open.
Right.
So, that's the difference there. If you're going to have a year-round attraction, period, you know that you're not going to be running these huge lines all the time. Hopefully you'll have a steady trickle, but it won't be this mad crush of humanity trying to get in. And so you need to have fewer actors and probably a smaller haunt. And they all seem to be opening almost without fail in places that have a lot of pre-existing foot traffic.
Right.
Now, I almost said they almost all open in tourist areas. But then I remembered that that's not true because you have the ghost houses in India, for example.
Right.
That are opening in malls. Malls are not thought of as tourist areas. Sometimes they are.
Yeah.
But they're not thought of as that.
Yeah.
So, you have like shopping malls. You do have tourist districts. Nightlife districts were real popular for this.
Right.
And I found that one really, really interesting. And there were even some opening in train stations.
Yeah.
Like, or metro, or any kind of like transit hub.
Right.
And that, once again, makes sense. Tons of foot traffic, and you're going to get visitors from out of town who might swing by out of curiosity.
Yeah, I would go.
I'd go, totally.
Yep.
And also, obviously, especially in the UK, you're going to see it a lot in historic buildings.
Right.
Because, the historic buildings are everywhere. Tourist destinations, usually.
Yeah.
Even though it's interesting how, in the UK, a lot of castles that are beautiful beyond belief are not tourist destinations.
Yeah, I know. And we got a little flack for choosing to go to Tynemouth one day.
Yeah, I love Tynemouth. That's a beautiful castle and priory.
Yeah.
Right there on the River Tyne, Newcastle.
But your friends called it a bunch of rocks.
A pile of rocks. Yeah, I remember them. Like, what?
Yeah.
I guess when you have that much history, you take some of it for granted. I don't know. That was weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, all of these haunts take a great deal from local culture.
Right.
Whatever that means. Whatever is scary or frightening to that culture is what goes into the haunt. We mentioned the Japanese ghost culture.
Right.
They do a lot with that in the Japanese haunts, for example.
Yeah.
UK, they obviously are still working through their dungeon issues.
Yeah.
Say it's safe to say. So there are a lot of haunts and dungeons or dungeon-themed haunts at the very, very least. So yeah, you have things like that. And it's interesting because in the U.S., and this is something I was thinking about, we have a lot of haunts, even that don't necessarily incorporate movie characters, movie themes. They yeah. use elements from horror films.
Right.
In their haunts. That's because that's what we as a culture are afraid of. We have trained ourselves to be afraid of horror movies.
Yeah.
And what the stuff in there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we don't use a lot of the local legends.
No, not much.
Which is surprising and a little disappointing.
Because we have a lot of really great local legends, especially. Right. But, you know, like, there was that one town with the chicken that was...
Yeah, I wonder how that worked out for them.
Yeah, I'm curious about that one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they try to pull as much as they can from local culture, which I think it makes a lot of sense. And this is the other thing I found interesting. They are often, not all the time, but disproportionately often built by U.S. companies, built and designed by U.S. companies.
Yeah.
And they are operated day-to-day by locals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the reason I believe that, like I said, I only found one instance where a foreign company opened a haunt in the U.S.
Right.
And that was the one I told you about.
In Spain.
In Spain, yeah. Spanish company. And I think the reason for that is because U.S. companies have the expertise in pneumatics and design and, you know, all the things that we haunters take for granted.
Yeah.
All those weird little skills like how to do foam and all that.
Right.
They're pretty specialized skills.
Yeah.
And it's easy to see why, because we have tons of great design and build teams here in the United States.
Right.
And since you only have to design and build a haunt once,
yeah,
until you go to do your redesign, it makes sense sometimes to bring people over rather than try to train a local crew.
Yeah, well, the other thing is I think that a lot of the companies that build the big animatronics and the big sets and things are U.S.-based.
Yeah.
I don't think that they've made it across this.
And I think this owes to both our haunt culture in the U.S. and to our movie culture in the U.S.
Right.
There's a lot of overlap there in terms of prop building, especially.
Yeah.
That, I think, seems to be, like, the things that remain consistent from country to country to country as we bounced around and as I bounced around the research. But, yeah, what can we learn from this? Mm-hmm. And I think the main thing we can really pull is how to operate a year-round haunt.
Yeah.
These other countries have really mastered the year-round haunt in a way that we have not in the United States.
Yeah.
And I know I harp on year-round haunting all the time.
Yeah.
Because I keep thinking if we as an industry can find a way to break the confines of the 2 months, a month and a half to 2 months a year we're allowed to be open,
yeah,
then there's additional opportunity for us.
Yeah, I think Ripley's is probably the only chain haunted houses that are open year round that I can think of.
Yeah, then that worries me.
Well, yeah. I've heard some are better than others.
I'll agree with that. I have heard that too. But I've got to say, I like how different all these experiences are. Like the Japanese haunts.
Right.
Find a much more interactive experience, for example. These are ideas that we could glean and try to make our haunts different from the ones across town.
Right. Yes, value-added selling.
Yes. Well, that's one of the things that I always kind of struggle with, is we go to a lot of haunted houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that with only a handful of exceptions, the fundamental haunted attraction experience has always been the same in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fundamentals have been pretty much the same.
Yes. Here's your path. You go down it. You get scared.
You get scared, and that's the end of it.
Yep.
That really hasn't changed. Sometimes it's on a trail. Sometimes it's in an old historical building. Sometimes it's in a warehouse. You know, the sets change, but the fundamental premise does not. These haunts really do challenge the fundamental premise a lot of times.
Right.
And I think that's a great idea. Because if it's something we can incorporate, if it's something we can add and build on, then it's a way for us to distinguish ourselves.
Yeah.
Because right now, we have endless discussions. Which haunt's the scariest? Which haunt's the scariest?
Yeah.
But they all scare the same ways.
Right.
They all take the same approach.
Yeah, they do. I think that the only one that's been truly different in that area was put on by a theater group. And that was because it was very much story-based and character-based.
Yeah, that experience to me felt more like we were watching a play that we were just moving with the scenes.
Yeah, watching weird. A play, or I felt more like an actor.
Yeah.
In the scene. I felt more like I was taking part in.
A participant in an improv play.
Yes.
Walking from scene to scene. How's that?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. Other thing I think we can learn, though, is how to make haunts with lower ticket prices.
Yeah.
This.
Because if you're getting a steady trickle year-round, then you can lower your price.
Especially if you're able to have fewer actors.
Right.
Build that smaller haunt. Build it so it requires fewer actors. You don't need to charge $35 a ticket.
Right.
And that's one of the things. Right now, the high ticket prices are necessary.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, haunts can't stay in business. I mean, haunts struggle to keep their doors open with these high prices and these huge crowds.
Right.
Like I said, there are haunts in India that charge $1 a ticket.
Yeah.
And keep the lights on, or off. As the case yes. might be, it is a haunted attraction.
That's true. You get just LED candles everywhere.
Exactly. But it's so fascinating to me, so I think that's something else we might be able to pull from it. And also how to build smaller haunts that are still very, very effective.
Right.
Because that's something that came across in all of the countries I looked at. Was that people were talking breathlessly about how terrified they were inside these attractions.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if that's because they are truly that scary,
mm-hmm.
because they play on the local lore and things that the people are already afraid of, or if it's because it's a new industry.
It's still fairly novel in a lot of these places.
Exactly. They just haven't been exposed to it as much as we have.
Yeah, I think it may be a little bit of all three.
Yeah.
But you know what? That is one of the things is right now, there are parts of the world which don't have haunted attractions.
Right.
I mean, I found it interesting how much it's grown, how much it's expanding, and how there seem to be haunts everywhere.
Yeah.
But there are still plenty of towns and cities.
Oh, yeah.
And destinations without one. I don't mean to say like every villa across the world right. has a haunt. They don't.
No.
Don't. Pretty much every major city, I believe, has at least one or two.
Yeah.
I'm hard-pressed to think of any that I would comfortably say do not have a haunted attraction, other than, like I said, others in the Middle East, maybe. Because
right.
Dubai has one, and like I said, I believe that was the only one in the Middle East at the time.
Right.
But the point of the matter remains is that there are plenty of opportunities for international growth
mm-hmm.
and for this type of expansion.
Yeah.
And that's, like you said, it's bringing this art form to people that have not experienced it, and then molding it and reshaping it to fit and to work with the local culture.
Right.
It's so fascinating.
It is.
But anyways, I think that's about all I've got. Do you have any other thoughts? Anything you want to throw out?
No.
No. Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for wasting another wonderful hour with us. Hope you enjoyed it. Please do follow us at Haunt Weekly on Twitter and Haunt Weekly on Facebook. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode number 57, International Haunting. We'll see you guys next week.